I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. If you can't win a debate on the merits, what do? Well, you just shut the other side up. That's what Democrats in our state are trying to do when it comes to two new initiatives. Plus, Governor Bob Ferguson celebrates a discredited homelessness agency. And the Seattle Times claims it can't write what it wants to write about Charlie Kirk while writing what it wants to write about Charlie Kirk. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Democrats will shout fascist, 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 while they themselves engage in behavior that is far closer to fascism than anything Republicans or conservatives are doing in America today. And one of the things that they will do that is fascism, that is a form of totalitarianism, is they will try to snuff out dissent. Sometimes they'll do that with a bullet, like in the case of Charlie Kirk. But oftentimes, and far more common, is they will do it with their words and their actions. They will threaten, they will harass, they will intimidate, they will shame. They will do anything that they can, and we experience it every single day. They will do anything they can to make it too scary to speak out and too dangerous to speak out. And they did it all throughout 2023 when Let's Go Washington was running initiatives. Yes, initiatives that conservatives tend to like, anti-tax initiatives, an initiative supporting parental rights. And what did the left and the mainstream Democratic Party do in all of 2023 while those initiatives were out in the community and voters had an option to sign them? Well, they thought, well, we can't beat those initiatives on the merits. You know, these initiatives are very popular. People are signing them, left, right, and center. So what's the alternative? Well, we have to stop people from having the ability to sign them. We have to shame people who sign them. We have to shame people who are collecting signatures, because we cannot win the debate if we just focus on the merits of the argument and make our best case to the electorate of Washington State. I covered this extensively in 2023 on the show, as the Let's Go initiatives were right into the final, going across the finish line in the final days. There were multiple instances of signature gatherers being harassed. In fact, I was there for one when I was shopping at Costco one day. And this woman had come and crossed out an entire page of signatures at a Costco. The police were called, and it was just one of many instances that were happening, where if you dared to try to collect signatures and allow voters to have an opportunity to share their opinion and to make their voice heard, well, you can't let them do that. So let's go there. Let's threaten them. Let's, cross out signatures. Let's destroy signatures. And one of the reasons this got so bad in 2023 is it was sanctioned by the Washington State Democratic Party. You'll recall this very well. They set up a snitch line, that they had a number that people could call to snitch on, oh, there's a signature gatherer, a lawful signature gatherer. So let's send out our minions to harass them. They even said, note what the person who's collecting signatures is wearing. Take pictures of them if you can, and send it back to us so we can name them and shame them and send people out to harass them. So it was an effort to harass lawful signature gatherers and disrupt the democratic process that was sanctioned by the Washington State Democratic Party. Now, in 2023, you'll recall, things got so bad that some Republican state lawmakers said, we have to do something about this. More and more, it's just conservatives who are running initiatives, because Democrats control all aspects of government. So they don't really have a reason to run an initiative, because if they want to pass something, they'll just pass it. So it's really, people who feel like their voices are in the minority, who it's their last way to push back against the party in power, is via the initiative process and to say, hey, let's make our voice heard this way. And so Republicans were like, we've had enough of Democrats trying to snuff out our last resort, the initiatives. So they put forth a very reasonable bill at the time that was like, we'll put a protective buffer zone around these signature gatherers, similar to what we do at ballot drop boxes, where you can, you know, drop your ballot in without fear that you'll be harassed or intimidated. So it was the same idea. Hey, this, you're exercising your right to make your voice heard as a voter, so let's do the same thing. And it even got the support, I will say, of the one sane Democrat on this issue, Secretary of State Steve Hobbs. You'll recall I sent his office a letter. They sent me a response, invited me to Olympia to meet with him. I went and I testified on behalf of this bill to protect signature gatherers. Steve Hobbs sent someone from his office to testify in committee on behalf of this common sense bill to protect signature gatherers in the same way that we protect other aspects of the democratic process, because I thought Democrats were all about, yay, protecting democracy, right? Well, no, you can't have that. They'll protect aspects of democracy that serve them. But we can't protect aspects of democracy that serve the other side. And so you had Democrats and progressives who showed up to testify against this bill, including, you know, one of the most prominent progressive organizations in the state, the Northwest Progressive Institute, and they show up in front of this committee, and what do they argue? Oh, well, you can't have a buffer zone around these hateful, bigoted signature gatherers because we have a right to shout at them and tell them how horrible they are.
The bill refers to only people collecting signatures. There's another way to participate in the process, and that is to share with someone who is considering signing a petition what I believe to be the truth, what somebody believes to be true. I had an experience once where I heard someone saying incredibly vile things about gay people, and I interrupted and I corrected, and my three-year-old daughter actually said, please stop saying that. You're hurting people I love.
Yeah.
That would have been that would be prohibited.
Which it wouldn't have been prohibited. You can still, there's nothing stopping, and there was nothing in that bill in 2023. That would have stopped someone who, let's say, disagreed with the Parental Bill of Rights initiative from setting up an opposing booth, you know, 25 feet away with some signs and encouraging people to say, hey, before you sign, come talk to us. Hear our opinion and hear their opinion. That wasn't enough, though. We can't do that. That's not going to stop people. We have to be able to be right in their face, yelling and screaming and calling them hateful bigots and transphobes, because that's how we do things in the Democratic Party. Can't disagree. We either got to put a bullet in your neck, we've got to make you feel unsafe, we've got to label you and shame you so you're so ashamed of supporting something that you agree with that you just won't do it, you won't get involved. And so, of course, what did Democrats do? Well, they rejected that bill. They rejected a totally reasonable effort for all their claims about, oh, democracy is under attack from Donald Trump. Well, they simultaneously attacked democracy in this state in any way they could think of. And they rejected that bill and said, nah, we're not going to do that. So is it any surprise, and why am I so wound up about this today? Is it any surprise that 2 years later, while Let's Go Washington launches two new initiatives, that Democrats are doing the exact same thing? Well, of course it's not a surprise. They can get away with literally anything we allow them to get away with as a populace. They're the party in power. They have vast majorities. They can do anything they want to do. They can kill any bill they want to kill. No consequences for it. There was no electoral consequences for them in this state in 2023 when they wouldn't protect signature gatherers. So why not harass them now? Especially when the two new initiatives from Let's Go Washington are so contrary to their fundamental beliefs. What are the two new initiatives as a reminder? Protect girls' sports by keeping biological boys out of girls' sports. And then to try once again to reinstate the Parental Bill of Rights so parents know what's happening with their kids at school. For any common sense person, those are very reasonable initiatives, but not for the Democratic Party. And so now you're seeing these signature gatherers out in the community, trying to collect enough signatures by the end of the year. So, of course, what's happening? Same thing that happened in 2023. They're being harassed. They're being intimidated. They're being threatened in some instances. And in some instances, people are destroying the signatures of voters who decided to sign. So just yesterday, there were three, potentially four, we're looking into the fourth, instances that got so bad that police had to be called just yesterday. Just yesterday. And they run the gamut, but all of them serve the same purpose. All of them in some way disenfranchise voters and are an attack on democracy. For instance, in Vancouver, Washington, there was a manager of Fred Meyer who just took it upon themselves to say, I don't like these initiatives, so I'm going to set up a big line of carts around the table. I can't stop them from setting up the table because it's a public square. We've allowed other people to collect signatures and Girl Scouts to sell cookies. So under the law, you can't just pick and choose once you've become a public square. So we can't do that. So what do? Oh, well, let's set up carts around the whole table and make it more difficult for Washington voters to share their opinion. So that's the kind of stuff that we're getting multiple reports of. But then, of course, there are instances that are even worse than that and that are criminal. It is a gross misdemeanor if you try to destroy, steal in any way, make it so that a signature that someone puts on an initiative will not count. And that's happening left and right with nary a consequence. For instance, this happened in Tacoma, and we're still getting to the bottom of some of this. We've been in touch with the Tacoma Police Department, but this is what the signature gatherer at this location, I believe it was a Walmart, in Tacoma said happened. She's collecting signatures. She says a black male walked up asking or acting like he was going to sign. And instead he scribbled out, and I had to blur it a little bit because I don't want to dox all the good common sense citizens who signed these initiatives. So he decided he was going to pretend this guy pictured here. Oh, I'm going to pretend that I'm going to sign. Nope, I'm going to go up and I'm going to scribble out all the other people who were exercising their rights under the state constitution to have their voice heard. And then the signature gatherer also said that there was a woman who said that she would beat her ass if she wasn't sitting there in front of the Walmart. Because, of course, threats, right? Threats of violence. Typical stuff. There was another incident that happened. We're waiting for surveillance video of this incident. I don't have it yet. Hopefully I'll have it on tomorrow's show. Happened at a Bonnie Lake Walmart. A young male, like somewhere between 19 and 25 years old, this is the description of the signature gatherer, grabbed multiple sheets, fully completed sheets of signatures for these initiatives, ran into the bushes and ran away. This signature gatherer says, here the Walmart employees were very kind, came out, tried to help gather up the things that had been strewn, made sure she was okay. The police were called. The police are working to gather a surveillance video to see if they can identify this individual who would be guilty of a gross misdemeanor. Now, why do you think that they resort to these things? Like I said, it's because they cannot win this debate on the merits. They can't. Banning biological boys from competing in girls' sports is an 80-20 issue. All the polls suggest that, if not higher, even in a state like Washington. There's no legitimate case to be made for it without lying and gaslighting and threatening and harassing and even assaulting or destroying. So that's what they're doing. The question is, will Democrats do anything about it? Of course not. Now, we plan to reach out to Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, who stood with us in 2023. And I gave him a ton of credit for that. I met with him personally. We had a great conversation about it. He sent someone again to testify on behalf of the bill to create a reasonable buffer zone to allow people to collect signatures without fear. So I think that Steve Hobbs will stand with us again this time around. But that doesn't mean that the rest of the Democrats in Olympia won't, because they're pushing these things. Again, they're the ones who put out a snitch line in 2023. And the media doesn't cover this stuff. The media is perfectly fine with really anything that Democrats do. I mean, can you imagine? Again, it's like a broken record. Can you imagine if the roles were reversed and there was some initiative about trans rights and Republicans were out there threatening, harassing, ripping up sheets, drawing on sheets, stealing sheets of valid signatures? Oh my God, it would be the front page of the Seattle Times. It would be lead the headlines on all the news stations. It's just crazy to me. And I don't know what it'll take for people to start taking seriously the danger of one-party rule. one party that is only policing itself. They can do whatever they want to do. They cannot do whatever they want to do. They make up the rules because there is no dissent. It's so scary. And all of these leftists who scream about fascism and totalitarianism and their concern about Donald Trump and where the country is heading. And oh my God, he's silencing dissenting views and Jimmy Kimmel and all these things. Meanwhile, it's been happening in their own backyard for years and years and years. And they don't flinch because they're perfectly fine being lorded over as long as they're being lorded over by someone who they agree with. They don't care if people are shut up. If people are punished for their views, as long as it's the people who they disagree with. It is such scary stuff, and that's why I don't take a lot of it seriously from the left when they're complaining about all these free speech and attacks on democracy and political violence in January 6th. Because all of that, they do tenfold and don't complain about it at all. And I gotta say, I was gonna reach out to some of the high school athletes who we've had on the show, the young female athletes who've been so brave and who've spoken up. I mean, 15, 16 years old, who've come out and spoken up and stood up for themselves and said, we shouldn't have to play against biological boys, who've put themselves out there, who've been harassed as children online by nutcases. I was gonna reach out and say, hey, do you guys wanna do a signature gathering event for these two Let's Go Washington initiatives, especially the one that protects girls' sports? And I'm sure they would love to, but I don't know if in good conscience I can do that. Because I don't know that we can protect them. I wouldn't put it past adults on the left to go out and scream and harass or even assault teenage girls. I mean, would any of you be willing to send out your teenage daughter to collect signatures for one of these initiatives, knowing how unhinged and dangerous the other side is when confronted with any sort of dissent for radical gender ideology? I mean, I was protested collecting signatures and called a transphobe by a big group outside a coffee shop. And you know what? We did it anyway, but I'm an adult. I had security. And I know these young girls, and we'll still talk to them, but I know they so badly want to bring about change, and this initiative finally gives them an opportunity to do that. But there's bringing about change and there's putting your life on the line to bring out change. And yes, I think it's that bad. I think every single one of these signature gatherers, be they paid or volunteers, literally are putting their life on the line and risk being killed by collecting signatures to protect girls' sports and to protect parental rights. How sad and sick is that? If I did a signature gathering event for this today, I would hire security for it. I would hire armed security to be out collecting signatures for two common sense initiatives that I think most Washingtonians would support. That's insane. So I don't want to hear jack shit from the left about the political violence and the temperature in this country. Well, I can't even go out collecting signatures or send teenage girls who want to be part of the democratic process out into their own communities collecting signatures for something that they care so deeply about. How disgusting is that? And Democrats won't do jack. They won't do jack to protect this aspect of the democratic process while they scream and shriek to high heaven that Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. Good God. Good grief. It's insane. What do I even say? We ranted about this for months in 2023. We talked about this for months. We did so much with elected leaders. We did all we could behind the scenes to say, hey, let's protect democracy. You care about democracy, right? Let's do it. Yeah, we'll protect democracy for our voters, not for your voters. Wild. Disgusting. All right, coming up next, we'll have a new edition of our segment. Wow, I am so wound up about this because it's taken me back to that fight in 2023 to do something so basic and so common sense and to have Democrats painted as this hateful, bigoted thing. And it's driving me nuts. My heart rate is through the roof. All right, calm down, Brandy. Go to RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, you need them to help you navigate this insane climate that we're in. And if you are, you know, if you've got one rental property or five rental properties, you know there's new laws seemingly all the time, new policies, new regulations, who you can rent to, who, you know, how you can get them out, when you can evict someone, etc. So sign up to become a member of RHA. They can help you navigate all of that. And while you're at it, sign up to attend the Engage Conference being put on by RHA October 22nd and 23rd at Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. Jonathan Cho and I are going to be talking about housing policy on a panel. We welcome you to be there. And can I also just say, I've had multiple people, God, I'm pissed off today, multiple people email me saying, Brandy, you know, you're advertising you're going to be at the Engage Conference, and isn't that kind of dangerous given the kind of people who, you know, like rent control? Same thing. It's like, why do we always have to worry about crazy leftists coming to hurt us places? It's just insane. Anyway, Engage Conference, October 22nd, 23rd, Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. Please join us and my friend Jonathan Cho. We'll be talking about housing policy. Sign up, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, let's get to an edition of our segment. The Seattle Times is straight up trash. All right, so the Seattle Times editorial team has a lot to say about the Charlie Kirk situation. And of course, none of it can be sane and reasonable. And hey, you know, this is so horrible what happened to him. And people are right to be angry. And the president's right to be angry. And, you know, how can we move forward as a country and heal or whatever it is? No, they have to blame conservatives for making the situation worse. So there were two editorials, one by Danny Westneat, the other by Naomi Osheka. I can never say her last name. The Danny Westneat one is kind of what you'd expect. The headline, Politics of the End, is a class at Seattle U, but it could be a study of last week's news. And in it, he basically argues that President Trump is the one who's further polarizing the country after Charlie Kirk was the one who was assassinated by a leftist. Got it. Really hot take there, Danny Westneat. The other one, and this arguably to me is much worse because it's just so stupid. Headline, what can we say about Charlie Kirk? Only what those in power want us to. Okay, first of all, we got to wrap our minds around this. So here we have an opinion writer for the Seattle Times publishing an article that says you can only say what those in power want you to say about Charlie Kirk. So, okay, if that headline is true to form, then what do those in power want you to say? Well, I guess Donald Trump would want you to say that he's a hero and he was an inspiration to young men. So if she can only write about what people in power want her to write about Charlie Kirk, then what follows should be a very glowing editorial about Charlie Kirk, right? No, of course not. In the editorial, she writes exactly what she wants to write about Charlie Kirk. And guess what? No one's making her take it down. She's not getting fired. President Donald Trump isn't on social media angry posting about her, because this is America. And you can actually, Naomi, say whatever you want to say about Charlie Kirk. Doesn't mean that there might not be some consequences, because of course, free speech comes with consequences. But if we were living in this dictatorship that you want us to believe that we're living in, you would never be able to post an article like this. Never. I feel like some of these writers need to actually go and live under a dictatorship so they understand what suppression of free speech really means. But let's read into her op-ed a little bit, shall we? I just want to point out, and it's so shameless, one of the lines in here, given the events of the past week, it would be reckless to presume to know the motive of Charlie Kirk's accused killer. Are you kidding me? Do you think for one second in any other sort of shooting that you have the Seattle Times saying, oh, you know, let's say a shooting at a gay nightclub like Pulse. Oh, so you think the Seattle Times a week later is like, it would be reckless to presume to know the motive of Charlie Kirk's accused killer. Of course not. But they'll do it here, even though the motive is very clear. There's a ton of evidence. Law enforcement has already been out. Even his own family has been out saying, well, he'd been, you know, radicalized in a leftist ideology. I just had to point that out. So here's the basic gist of her article. In the days following the assassination, it became no longer enough to say you condemn the killing. No, you also had to praise and valorize Kirk, a man who was outspoken on his opinions about Black people, immigrants, transgender people, and other. First of all, Naomi, No one's saying that you had to say anything about Charlie Kirk. I don't recall anyone saying that there was some sort of dictate for every member of the media to condemn the killing. Can you find anything like that? You could have just said nothing. She says, no, you also had to praise and valorize Kirk. Who said you had to praise him? Who said you had to valorize him? No one. Now, you know, probably shouldn't go out and say, hey, he deserved to be shot in cold blood in front of his family. You know, that might lead to some consequences. As it did for private citizens from their private employers. But no one has said, Naomi, certainly not Donald Trump or anyone in the government, that you had to, that you were forced to come out after he was killed and praise and valorize Charlie Kirk. She goes on to say, and then this is the best part of this, or the worst part, however you feel about it. In an article where she's saying that, you know, Trump is so dangerous that you can only say things about Charlie Kirk that the Trump administration would approve of. Then she goes on at length to say all the things she hated about Charlie Kirk. Does she not realize that the whole premise of her article falls apart within the first few paragraphs? And I'm not even going to read it, but she goes out and talks about, you know, totally out of context things Charlie Kirk said about black pilots and DEI and da-da-da and all of these things. So she does this long, long, long list. Again, I'm not even going to read it. Not worth it. Where she paints Charlie Kirk as a horrible, hateful bigot. In an op-ed where she's saying, we can only say things about Charlie Kirk that Donald Trump approves of. Some real winners there, Seattle Times. You're only choosing the best of the best, the brightest minds to write these words for your readers. Wild. Speaking of, quickly, Jimmy Kimmel. I think we had it at the end of the show yesterday. It was breaking news that Disney is allowing Jimmy Kimmel back on the air tonight. And here's what they're saying, you know, for all the, and I said that I wasn't fully privy, obviously, to the conversations the FCC had behind the scenes about the Jimmy Kimmel situation. So I said, I'm open. Like, if Disney comes out and says, hey, the FCC was putting undue pressure on us, said this and that, I was open to the possibility that the Trump administration and the FCC had taken things too far. But here's what Disney is saying. Last Wednesday, we made the decision to suspend production of the show to avoid further inflaming a tense situation at an emotional moment for our country. It's a decision we made because we felt some of the comments were ill-timed and thus insensitive. We have spent the last days having thoughtful conversations with Jimmy, so after those conversations, we reached the decision to return the show on Tuesday. So they're saying, you know, hey, we were worried given what he said, which of course Jimmy Kimmel said that the guy who shot Charlie Kirk was MAGA, which at that time it was already very clear he wasn't, and that on its face doesn't make sense. And so they said, tensions were high. I'm sure they were getting a bunch of nasty calls. You know, that's the free market. Not going to watch your show anymore. Not going to watch your show anymore. So they decided, let's just put a pause on it. They've since been talking to Jimmy Kimmel and said, we're going to have him back. Now, they aren't saying anything about whether he's going to apologize tonight. I heard his guest is Gavin Newsom, which makes me just want to gag. But, you know, they made a decision that they think is going to be best for them. Now, there's a wrinkle in that. Sinclair, which owns a ton of ABC stations across the country, including Como News in Seattle, says it doesn't matter that Walt Disney is bringing back the show. We're not airing it. We're not airing it on any of our stations across the country, which is a ton of America. So even though Jimmy Kimmel's going to be back, there are millions of Americans who, unless they go online and watch a stream of it, it's not going to be on their TV screens. Here's what Sinclair said. Beginning Tuesday night, so that's tonight, Sinclair will be preempting Jimmy Kimmel Live across our ABC affiliate stations and replacing it with news programming. Discussions with ABC are ongoing as we evaluate the show's potential return. So that takes out Como News in Seattle. And also, I think, I can't remember what the call letters are, but a station in Portland as well that Sinclair owns. Nextstar, the other largest owner of ABC stations across the country, they're doing the same thing. You know who Nextstar owns? King 5 News in Seattle, which last I checked is, I think, still the highest rated news station in Seattle. Where all the leftists love King 5. Well, can't watch Jimmy Kimmel on King 5 News. They said Nexstar Media Group announced that the company's owned and operated partner television stations affiliated with the ABC television network will continue to preempt Jimmy Kimmel Live. We made a decision last week to preempt it following what ABC referred to as Mr. Kimmel's ill-timed and insensitive comments at a critical time in our national discourse. We stand by that decision, pending assurance that all parties are committed to fostering an environment of respect, constructive dialogue in the markets we serve. In the meantime, we note that Jimmy Kimmel Live will be available nationwide on multiple Disney-owned streaming products, while our stations will focus on continuing to produce local news and other programming relevant to their respective markets. Look, here's the thing. So first of all, I think this throws cold water on the free speech argument. I really do. I mean, I still think some of the comments that the FCC chair is reported to have made were inappropriate. I do. But ultimately, it does not sound like that is what took Jimmy Kimmel off the air. Disney says, no, we took him off the air because it was ill-timed, inappropriate, insensitive, and inflammatory. We talked to him and are giving him an opportunity to come back and make it right. And then, free markets, you still have the vast majority of ABC-affiliated stations across the country who are saying, we don't care if you've talked to Jimmy Kimmel over the last couple days. We're not airing his show. And I'll tell you what, now there might be a bump initially in Jimmy Kimmel's ratings. I'm sure there's a lot of looky-loos who are going to be tuning in to see exactly what he has to say, which again is why he's going to have Gavin Newsom on, because they're trying to set Gavin Newsom up as the 2028 presidential contender. So they know there'll be a bunch of eyeballs on it. I'm sure he'll be insufferable on it. But I think you'll have a bump, right? And a lot of people will watch some clips of it online. But ultimately, if you have, and I don't know the exact percentage, I'm going to guess 60% of the country that can't just turn on their TV and watch it because their station's not carrying it because they're owned by Sinclair or Nexstar. That's how ratings are judged. You have these networks, and I know it gets sort of into the weeds, but it's important to understand how it works. The streaming ratings, they're not really selling that. When you look at how ratings are calculated, it has to be people watching it on television if you're going to sell those ads in between things while it airs. So his ratings can't go up. I mean, again, you might have a little spike, but you have millions of Americans who have no access to it and no ability to watch it on their televisions. So I don't know how you make money off the show. Unless, of course, Sinclair and Nexstar ultimately change their mind. Maybe Jimmy Kimmel will come out tonight. I'm open to that possibility and offer a very sincere apology, explain why he said what he said, and explain maybe a plan going forward to be less horrible and divisive. And then maybe that's enough for Nexstar and Sinclair to change their minds. And I also assume that we're going to see some sort of left-wing protest outside Como and King because of their ownership and, oh, you're hateful and yeah. It would be actually hilarious to see lefties protesting outside King because King is so far to the left when it comes to their news product, but they just happen to be owned by Nexstar. But yeah, it's just wild. So we'll see. I asked you in our daily subscriber show poll, which we'll get to at the end of the show, about whether you're going to watch Jimmy Kimmel tonight. So I'll read some of your responses about that. I got to admit, I might even watch Jimmy Kimmel tonight just to see what he says. All right, coming up next, we'll have a double dose of unbelievable. First, we're happy to be working with Valentine Roofing, a longtime sponsor of our friend Dory Monson's show, now becoming our newest advertiser on Undivided. So, of course, we always encourage you to support the businesses that support us. So if you know that your roof is on its last leg, we'll reach out to Valentine Roofing, and they're going to come in, and they're going to do a free roof assessment. So here's the best part. Like, if your roof can be repaired, maybe it's just got a weak spot, they're just going to repair it. They're not going to try to sell you a new roof. But if you know that you need a new roof and you need to replace it, they'll come in, they'll do a leak stoppage for free just to make sure that, hey, if it's leaking, we got to stop that to avoid further damage. And then they'll come in, schedule time to replace your roof. And they have, if you go anywhere on any of the sites, Google, Angie, Facebook, they've got hundreds of five-star reviews. They even offer zero down financing for most projects. So you can get the work done now, pay over time, which is a huge relief because we all know. Last thing any freaking homeowner wants to do is have to replace their roof. It can be a major cost. And so to be able to have zero down financing, I think is a big deal. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. And please tell them you heard about them on Undivided. It's important to support the businesses that support us and our mission. So 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate. All right. Double dose of our segment, Unbelievable. So on the show last week, we talked about Plymouth Housing. So Plymouth Housing is one of the biggest operators within the homeless industrial complex in Washington State. They get millions and millions of dollars of your money to provide housing to people who are drug addicted, homeless, trying to get back on their feet, presumably. But one of the biggest issues with Plymouth Housing, as so many other aspects of the homeless industrial cog, there's very little oversight of how the money is being spent, the outcomes on the people who, you know, get some of that housing. And what we've seen is a lot of these Plymouth Housing locations have just turned into indoor drug dens. I mean, there's people who are dying, overdosing. There's a lot of crime that kind of gravitates to those housing complexes, and it ends up being a drain on neighborhoods and their police resources, bringing down the quality of life for everyone. And so it really has been proven, I think, to be a failed model. Our friend Jonathan Cho had a fantastic story last week where he, you know, Plymouth Housing had this, I compared it to the Hunger Games. They had this gala. Fancy gala at the Westin in Seattle, where they had in all the, you know, people all dressed up to celebrate the work of Plymouth Housing. And Jonathan Cho went there and he questioned attendees and the head of Plymouth Housing as to why at this gala no one was talking about, and the crowd wasn't told at all about, the many, many issues and deaths with Plymouth Housing facilities. Here's part of his report.
A lot of the residents are dying of drug overdoses. Did they talk about that?
No, we're not. There's treatment programs, but they didn't mention any statistics.
Yeah, well, we've done numerous exposés showing all the deaths inside Plymouth Housing. Is that concerning to you?
Well, it's preventative, but I know that there's a model of harm reduction.
Yeah, well, treatment isn't required. Drug addiction treatment's not required. Do you think it should be required inside Plymouth? It's a story that Plymouth doesn't want to tell because they probably wouldn't be getting taxpayer dollars.
Do you keep track of all the deaths from drug overdoses in Plymouth House? Don't touch me again. You're on camera assaulting me, sir. Are your title sponsors like Microsoft aware of the horrific conditions inside Plymouth housing facilities? We've obtained the 911 calls from the Bellevue, the latest Plymouth housing facilities, Miss Lee. Can you just tell me why there's so many problems at the Bellevue Plymouth housing facilities, Miss Lee? Miss Lee, I thought Plymouth was about transparency.
I mean, it was just this stunning scene. You know, days before Jonathan put out that report, I was driving by that very Plymouth housing facility. It's along I-90 as you're coming up I-90 to get on 405 to Bellevue. And I saw like six cop cars there. Days before Jonathan put out that report, and I called him, I said, hey, I'm heading to this thing, but hot tip, there's a bunch of cop cars. He goes, I'm already here, Brandy. I've already been tipped off to it, because he's been covering so frequently these issues within Plymouth Housing. People are dying there. And then you go to the Westin at this fancy event where it's a public-private partnership and everybody's giving money to this wonderful thing, and they're hearing nothing about it. Nothing. They don't know. They're led to believe it's this wonderful thing and it's helping the homeless. No, it takes them off of a street corner where they were going to die, puts them out of sight, out of mind, in an apartment where they die. And it costs us millions of dollars. We're basically paying like $500,000 a person just for them to die indoors instead of on the streets. So a week after Jonathan does that report, that expose, here's Bob Ferguson last night on X. You can't make this stuff up. He posts, everyone deserves a safe, stable place to call home. Plymouth Housing makes that a reality for many Washingtonians. Proud to have them as a partner as we work to build a lot more affordable housing in our state. A week after this expose talking about how many people go there, you say safe, stable? How many people go there to die? How your money sends them there to die. And Bob Ferguson is celebrating it. We're so proud as the state of Washington to have them as a partner so we can build even more of these death camps. Can't fix the reason why they're on the streets in the first place. No, because that's cruel. No, they're perfect just the way they are. Drug addicted, all of that, mentally ill. Can't focus on the treatment, on the accountability. Let's just build a multi-million dollar apartment complex and shove them in there to be victimized and die. When do we wake up? It's crazy. They're never going to fix it because they get too much money. You know how much money the state of Washington takes from you to build these affordable housing units where they put in drug-addicted homeless people to die? It's been billions over time, only for the crisis to get exponentially worse. You know this by now. Our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle shared, she was also equally shocked by Bob's post. I can't believe a week after this expose, he's celebrating Plymouth Housing. And she talked a little bit, of course, she's an outreach worker, a volunteer, has built this big movement that is based in the truth. This is a drug crisis, not a homelessness crisis. She shared her thoughts after Bob Ferguson's post. She said, literally every drug addict I know says they get their drugs from the dealers at any one of the Plymouth housing projects. She said, we are rewarding drug dealers with free housing who prey on the mentally ill and seniors. How do the drug addicts support their habit? They steal and boost all day long, and Plymouth Housing also harbors those thieves. She said, I asked Plymouth Housing to investigate the stolen backpack seen here that tracked phones and laptops to Plymouth on Stewart, and they refused to cooperate. Eddie, a resident, tried to help us, and he told Andrea, everyone who lives here is a thief. She ended by saying, housing addicts doesn't remove crime, it enables it. So she says, out on the streets, which she's out talking to addicts and to homeless people every day, she says all of them are getting their drugs from someone associated with Plymouth Housing. Either they're living there, or as we've reported on before, thanks to great work on the ground from our friend Jonathan Cho with Discovery Institute, the drug addicts just set up shop outside the Plymouth Housing because they know that it's not one of the conditions to live there, to be clean and sober. So they think, wow, here's a building with 200 drug-addicted people in one place. What better place to set up shop than right outside? And that's the point Andrea's making. And of course, we know, if you're using that many drugs, you're funding the habit somehow. And we know it's through theft. You see it if you go down to 3rd and Pine or 12th and Jackson, the open-air markets where they're selling all sorts of things that they stole from small businesses nearby at a time when those businesses can hardly survive as it is, and are about to be hit with the largest tax increase in state history against businesses. So they steal things to fund their drug habit, and all of us, we pay for a roof over their head, where they're eventually just going to die. And Bob Ferguson thinks that's something worth celebrating. Unbelievable. Now, I didn't think I could top that, but unfortunately, there is an even more unbelievabler story today in our second dose. So it's one thing to, you know, talk about what's happening in Gaza. It's one thing to have concerns about the humanitarian issues in Gaza and the reality of war. People die in war, and innocent people die in war. And yes, innocent children die in war. I don't have a problem with people who, you know, want an end to the bombings in Gaza because they're worried about kids being killed. You know, I'd like to hope that they also have a problem with the terror attack on Israel on October 7th and the atrocities that were committed against Jewish people. I would like to think that there's some moral consistency, which obviously often is not the case. But look, if you, you know, just your message is, I don't want people to die in Gaza, I think you should be most mad at Hamas, but I'm not offended by that message per se. But celebrating October 7th and the massacre of innocent Israelis is obviously problematic. And we see an awful lot of that. And unfortunately, some of that has happened and did happen last year on the one-year anniversary of the October 7th attack. So we're coming up real quick on the second anniversary of the October 7th attack of Hamas in Israel. And it is genuinely one of the most disgusting things I have seen on all the disgusting things that have been said about that day. That Seattle public school students are planning to walk out of classes this October 7th. No, not to talk about, you know, the ongoing conflict and maybe their concerns, not to talk about the anti-Semitism. No, to celebrate the resistance that happened 2 years ago. Here's the flyer. Washington students, October 7th, walk out for Palestine. Meet at Cal Anderson Park. Palestine resists. Palestine will win. It's being put on by the Puget Sound Revolutionary Student Union. But you might say, well, where is the, you know, kind of celebratory part? Here it is on their Instagram account. Walk out for Palestine, October 7th. It says, 2 years ago, the heroic Palestinian resistance broke through the prison gates that surrounded Gaza. The heroic Palestinian resistance. The murder, the rape, the slaughter of children and parents, the taking of hostages. You have students who plan to celebrate that as a heroic resistance. And look, I would like to think, oh my God, this other one, this again on Instagram. October 7th is one of the most important events of our lifetime. Oh my God, it says, it was a great achievement for the Palestinian liberation movement. It showed the world the barbarity of Israel and shattered the myth of imperialism's invincibility. It awakened a great wave of worldwide solidarity with Palestine and the oppressed peoples of the world. You guys, this is a student group. And you wonder why we harp so much on the state of education and what has just become indoctrination camps. I wish I'd pulled the video. Remember Ian Golash, who's now thankfully losing his job as a Seattle public school teacher, when he came out and said that he believed that the rapes and murders in Israel on October 7th were justified. And he brought kids with him to do the interview where he said that. The same guy who in 2020 went with his students to storm in protest the King County Jail in the name of race and social justice and still kept his job. Who put his hands in the face of TV cameras and had students scream and yell at news media and still kept his job because the school district defended it as free speech. And so I'm not going to act surprised that there are students calling for a statewide walkout to celebrate the events of October 7th. Why any Jewish parent would send their child to a public school in Washington State is beyond me. Can you imagine the hostility that they would face? The hostility that they are facing? Can you imagine the sick feeling for those parents and those students who see these Instagram posts? Who see the slaughter of innocent Israelis called a great achievement for the liberation movement, being called the most important events of our lifetime, and a heroic resistance? You think OSPI, the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, will do or say anything about this? Of course not. You think there'll be any punishment for students who walk out of classes to celebrate October 7th? Of course not. I'm sure they won't be suspended. I'm sure they won't have detention. And I've said before, regardless of what you're walking out in protest for, there should be consequences because Seattle public school students will find any reason to walk out of classes because they're being trained to be the next generation of activists. Hell, they walked out of classes the eighth day of school this year to protest the new lunch schedule. You think there were consequences for them? Probably not. Because you have these teachers and these faculty members all the way up to the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction who want them to be activists. They want them to be socialists. They're birthing a new movement and trying to fill it with your kids, the school children. We wonder why the guy who shot Charlie Kirk grew up in a conservative home, showed really no signs of, you know, being problematic until his last couple years in high school. And then his first couple years after high school, he started off in college and all of a sudden he's radicalized. The schools are intentionally radicalizing kids to the point where they believe, or they don't have enough independent thought to push back against. And so they just are sheeple, and their friends are leaving to walk out. So they're going to leave to walk out and celebrate October 7th as an act of heroism. It's not a surprise. And I hate to tell parents what to do, but because I don't have kids, and I hate to sit here and be like, pull your kids out of public school. And we see that with conservatives on the internet all the time. Take your kids out of public school immediately. I know it's not that easy. But one of the things that if you have to keep your child there that you must do and that there's no excuse for not doing is to push back with every fiber of your being, is to be at your child's school demanding to know why this stuff is being supported and pushed on kids, is signing the initiative to restore parental rights, calling every friend you have that has a child in the public schools and having them sign it, having them speak out, having them push back on community forums and Facebook groups where these insane radicalized parents and their kids are saying all sorts of nonsense. Being quiet isn't an option anymore. I was reading this book. It's this great book that was given to me, Live Not by Lies. And it's just, you know, it talks about what happened with the Bolsheviks in Eastern Europe. And, you know, a lot of you will be familiar with that, and Red Terror and people who were killed and mass ideological killings and all that stuff. And, you know, I'm familiar with the history of that. But the way that it weaves it and makes it relevant to what's happening today in America is so profound to me. And it's actually like changed my life, this book, and my whole sort of way that I try to go about explaining to people the dangers of what's happening and the dangers of deciding to stay quiet. You know, all these mass horrors in history, be it the Holocaust or Red Terror, whatever it is, they are only possible when people decide to cower and stay quiet because they're worried about finding themselves, you know, on the fringes of society and being outcast and all of these things. But what's the alternative? Is you just live within the lie, right? We talk about it with radical, and I'm getting so deep on this, but we talk about it with radical gender ideology a lot. I'll have so many, you know, quiet conversations with friends who are across the political spectrum, and they don't agree with this nonsense, but they're never going to say it. They're never going to say it because they don't want to be yelled at and shamed and othered. So what do? They just live within the lie. They find a peaceful existence within the lie, and they just sit there and just let the days pass them by and let things get worse. You can't live within the lie anymore. We can't do that. We can't afford to do it because things will get even worse than they are. And I'm not saying that we're going to have something like what happened in Europe here. You know, I'm not saying that's how bad it's going to get and this just absolute totalitarianism, but we're on a path there, and there's a lot of the same signals. And so if you've convinced yourself that, hey, I'm not going to share the lies, but I'm not going to push back against them either, to me that's just as bad as sharing the lies, is not having an ounce of courage despite the potential consequences to say something about it. Oh, and you have this Ian Golash video you pulled up. Yeah, here's why kids in our school district think it's okay to walk out of classes to celebrate October 7th. Teachers like this.
Your post said that oppressors don't get to choose the form of resistance used against them.
That is true.
Well, then was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
The rape of women at a music festival was justified.
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
Were women murdered at the music festival?
They were.
Was that justified?
Yes.
The murder of innocent women just attending a music festival, that was justified in your opinion?
No. I think resistance against Israel is justified, yes.
Disgusting. Says it around kids that he brought with him, knowing he was going to say something like that. Unreal. All right, coming up next, we'll get to some national news. Kamala Harris is out with her new book. And apparently she's a homophobe. Apparently we're finding out that Kamala Harris is a homophobe. Or at the very least, she thinks you're a homophobe. Yeah, I think that's more accurate. She thinks you're a homophobe. But I think she's the homophobe. Does that make sense? We'll get to it. First, there's a lot happening with the global economy. And so if you're preparing for retirement, as all of us should be, hopefully, you might be concerned about a lot of things. The global trade deal or trade deals affecting global markets, uncertainty of AI, new digital coins. What does all this mean? And maybe you just want to get back to basics. Maybe you just want to figure out, okay, how much risk in all of this is my retirement portfolio actually exposed to? Well, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital can help you with that with his Back to Basics live webinar, October 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. This webinar will be a frank discussion on the basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So hear directly from Zach Abraham as he shares insights in his free Back to Basics webinar. Again, that's October 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And don't miss my weekly show, Swamp Watch, rebranded from Doge Watch, with our friend Zach. All right, in some national news. So Kamala Harris is doing her little book tour. I think it's called 107 Days. Yeah. Don't care, not going to read it. But I've been watching some highlights of the interviews that she's done. And she's, you know, calling it a frank and candid look at, you know, her time as the vice president, and especially those 107 days where she was running against Donald Trump for the presidency. And there are a couple of things that stand out from these interviews that she's given. She went on Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. But apparently in the book, she writes about, you know, the decision to pick Tim Walz, the Minnesota governor, as her running mate, and how, you know, controversial it was and all of this, and the other people who were out there for her to pick from. And I think, you know, conventional wisdom is you're probably going to pick a guy, right? You've got a girl running, so probably pick a male vice president. But some of the other people that were options were inarguably more qualified than Tim Walz, certainly better spoken than Tim Walz. And so she talks about two of them specifically. One of them is Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. And one of the things that I think everyone knew is she's not going to pick Josh Shapiro because he's Jewish, and because there's this segment of the left that hates Jewish people and is totally anti-Semitic, and everything happening in Israel and Gaza, they're just going to revolt against him because he's Jewish. And she kind of acknowledges in the book that his past statements about Gaza were considered, you know, troublesome. And so, yeah, she basically admits in the book she didn't pick Josh Shapiro because he's Jewish. So either she thinks so little of Jewish people, or she thinks so little of her voting base that they would not vote for the ticket because they hate Jewish people that much. And it was a similar crazy explanation for Pete Buttigieg. So if she doesn't pick Josh Shapiro because he's Jewish, why do you think she didn't pick Pete Buttigieg? Well, because he's gay.
Here's to say that he couldn't be on the ticket effectively because he was gay is hard to hear.
No, that's not what I said. That's that he couldn't be on the ticket because he is gay. My point, as I write in the book, is that I was clear that in 107 days, in one of the most hotly contested elections for president of the United States, against someone like Donald Trump, who knows no floor, to be a black woman running for president of the United States and as a vice presidential running mate, a gay man, with the stakes being so high, it made me very sad, but I also realized it would be a real risk. No matter how, you know, I've been an advocate and an ally of the LGBT community my entire life. Oh, it wasn't about any prejudice on my part, but
that
we had such a short period of time, and the stakes were so high.
I didn't not pick him because he's gay. I didn't pick him because he's gay, and I only had 107 days. And the stakes were so high. And I think you hate him because he's gay. So she thinks the Democratic voting base is too racist and homophobic to choose a ticket that has a black woman and a gay man. So she didn't think very much of her voting base. But also for her to say, no, I didn't say that. I didn't pick him because he was gay. And the stakes were super high. This woman, and then she went on to say, I don't have the clip, but she said, you know, it still ended up being one of the closest presidential contests of the 21st century. which clearly isn't the case. It was a blowout in every sense of the word. She lost the popular vote. She lost every swing state. And I saw someone went back and showed, if you look at the popular vote, like 2000 was closer, 2004 was closer, 2016 was closer, and 2020 was closer than her race. The only presidential contests that weren't closer were Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012. So she just spews lies. She shouldn't be doing rounds. And even CNN had this whole thing about how her approval rating, especially since the release of her book and her talking more, has just gone down immensely. So, yeah, it's not that he was gay, you guys. It's that he was gay and the stakes were high. So poor Pete Buttigieg. All right, I do want to talk really quickly about President Trump finally signing the order to designate Antifa as a terror organization. And I do believe that there are still lingering questions about what does that mean? You know, because clearly you cannot treat American citizens as extremists as they are the same way that you would treat like ISIS, okay? So I still don't really have a firm grasp from the Trump administration about, does this bring more resources to bear? Will it lead to more serious consequences for Antifa? But here's what the executive order says. So I want to make sure I read it to you. So it designates Antifa as a terrorist threat. They describe Antifa as a militant anarchist enterprise that explicitly calls for the overthrow of the United States government, law enforcement authorities, and our system of law. It uses illegal means to organize and execute a campaign of violence and terrorism nationwide to accomplish these goals. I agree with all that. This campaign involves coordinated efforts to obstruct enforcement of federal laws through armed standoffs with law enforcement, organized riots, violent assaults on immigration and customs enforcement and other law enforcement, and routine doxing of and other threats against political figures and activists. Antifa recruits, trains, and radicalizes young Americans to engage in this violence and suppression of political activity, then employs elaborate means and mechanisms to shield the identities of its operatives, conceal its funding sources and operations in an effort to frustrate law enforcement and recruit additional members. Individuals associated with and acting on behalf of Antifa further coordinate with other organizations and entities for the purpose of spreading, fomenting, and advancing political violence and suppressing lawful political speech. This organized effort, designed to achieve policy objectives by coercion and intimidation, is domestic terrorism. I agree with all of that. And I think that is one of the best sort of full explanations and definitions of the threat of Antifa that I've ever seen. And it encompasses, you know, really the coordinated nature of what they do. It goes on to say about the designation as a domestic terror organization. Because of the aforementioned pattern of political violence designed to suppress lawful political activity and obstruct the rule of law, I hereby designate Antifa as a domestic terror organization. All relevant executive departments and agencies shall utilize all applicable authorities to investigate, disrupt, and dismantle any and all illegal operations, especially those involving terrorist actions, conducted by Antifa or any person claiming to act on behalf of Antifa, or for which Antifa or any person claiming to act on behalf of Antifa provided material support, including necessary investigatory and prosecutorial actions against those who fund such operations. So how do they do that? How do they prove that, right? Some of these Antifa activists call themselves Antifa. So if you have someone who's committed one of these acts of domestic terrorism, and you can find instances online or in images, you know, sometimes they wear it on their person, of them referring to themselves as Antifa, all of a sudden now I think you can build that into a bigger thing using their own statements against them. Now, if they haven't outwardly identified themselves as Antifa, because you do have a lot of these people who are just some kid living in their parents' basement who gets angry and puts on their ninja cosplay costume and goes out and does destruction and damage. So I don't know how you tie them necessarily to this amorphous Antifa, which, you know, they're not card-carrying members. They don't have meetings, but they do call themselves Antifa, even while they're out doing these things. We have video evidence of that. So it sounds like what the Trump administration is going to do, and this is the first time it's ever been done, is to leverage the full investigatory power of the federal government to treat Antifa once and for all as the threat that it is. And I think that'll go hand in hand with United States attorneys across the country. Portland now has a United States attorney selected by Donald Trump. Seattle does not yet. I've heard that announcement is imminent, but it has to be someone who is willing to go after Antifa and the entities that fund it, because it's most important in the areas where Antifa is most active. So I would say Portland and Seattle are definitely the top two, but you also have an element of it certainly in California and in New York and maybe smaller across the country. But there is no doubt Antifa is most active in Seattle and Portland. So between the U.S. attorney in Portland and whoever the U.S. attorney is going to be in Seattle, we should be able to do some serious damage to Antifa's operations in the next 3 years. We have to get some of them in prison, federal prison, serving serious time for what amounts to, domestic terrorism. And it's not like you have to drum up things to put them in prison for. They give you plenty of opportunities and commit plenty of crimes worthy of lengthy federal prison sentences. So let's get it done. Let's not delay. Let's move forward and finally end this scourge of political violence that we've been living with in the Pacific Northwest for a long time. Okay, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll coming up next and comments from all of you wonderful viewers on our show today. First, I have told you guys that if you're thinking about selling your home, even if you're just at the beginning stages of that thought process, like, wow, I watch Brandy's show so much, and now I really want to leave Washington State and move somewhere more sane. Well, the first thing you should do is reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and he can talk you through what the market is doing right now. You know, timing is a big part of selling your home. If you can afford to sort of wait a little bit, sometimes there's better opportunities to do that. And so he's going to go through, give you a free market analysis, explain, you know, how long you can expect to take to sell your home. You can use their free home value calculator right there on the website to find out how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you just take it from there. And if it's, whether it's in a month or 6 months that you're going to actually finally go for it, Wes Jones can help you every step of the way. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, I want to get to our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. I asked you guys if you plan to watch Jimmy Kimmel's return to the airwaves tonight. Nicole, what about you?
I'll probably watch a clip from it on X or something like that, but I probably won't watch the whole episode, and I have no desire to, you know, wait for it right when it airs or anything like that. But I am curious to see if he apologizes or, which I actually doubt, but maybe addresses the issue somehow.
Yeah, and a lot of our subscribers can't even watch it if they wanted to, because they can't watch it on Como or King.
Right. It will be on Hulu Plus and or Disney Plus and Hulu, I believe.
But for free?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, no, not for free. Right. But a lot of people have those.
Yeah. So if people were just going to watch it, you know, it makes it more difficult, certainly, for people to watch.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to watch whatever clip gets pushed out on X of his opening monologue. But you think I'm going to sit through a half hour of Jimmy Kimmel talking to Gavin Newsom? Mm. Might as well gouge my eyeballs out with a spoon and stab my ear holes with a knife, because I don't want any part of that.
He's not funny.
No, and apparently our subscribers don't want any part of it either.
He used to be funny. I think at one point he was funny, and then he just allowed Trump to destroy him.
Yeah, he did. A lot of people used to be cool and funny, and then they allowed Trump to destroy them. What percentage of our subscribers do you think said yes, that they're going to watch it?
That they will watch him? I think 20%.
Two percent. You guys.
Well,
are like,
I guess that's because they have a lot of them have no option to.
Well,
watch
Jim
him
said,
on.
"Well, it's not going to be aired here, so I can't watch it." SB, I do. I want to see how this arrogant late night show host attempts to justify what he said. Christine. It's way past my bedtime and even further past my moral compass. Yeah, good for you. Don, never watch Jimmy. Don't intend to start. There is this element of me that doesn't want to give him the views, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, even though I don't have the ratings box that I think they still use to gauge views off of, but
he's got to be careful because he's got all these celebrities and just leftists in general supporting him. And so he's got to really walk the line, I'm sure. Maybe apologize, you know, keep the network happy, but also keep all of his supporters happy.
That's true.
I heard the other night Joe McHale was at the fair performing and he wore a Kimmel shirt.
That's embarrassing.
Right? Which he never mentioned Kimmel, but he wore a Kimmel shirt. And I heard from someone that the people that they were with were mad at Joe McHale for not mentioning his support of Kimmel. So he's wearing a shirt. It wasn't enough. And so they didn't post pictures of the show because they were mad at him for not mentioning it.
God.
And so that's the extent that they can turn on somebody, right? Yeah. And I think that he'll have to really walk that line.
It is a good point because right now, especially now, there ain't no Republicans who are going to watch his show.
No.
So if he risks alienating by not being sufficiently obedient to the leftists, well, then he's got both sides protesting him. And then he doesn't have a show. Over on Locals, Patsy Lee. I didn't watch it before. No need to watch it now. Late night TV hasn't been fun since Johnny Carson.
I liked Leno.
Leno had his days. Leno. Yeah. And, you know, the other guy who does the carpool karaoke. I can't remember his name. But sometimes there's funny individual segments that I'm like, oh, that gives me a good laugh. Matthew, I don't watch unfunny people that push Democratic Party propaganda. Well, then there's relatively few things for you to choose from late night TV. Yeah.
James Corden. That's
James Corden. Yeah, yeah. Some of those are fun. Like he did carpool karaoke with Adele, and I was like, that's amazing.
That was a good
Mostly because I love Adele. Mm-hmm. But anyway, sounds like you guys aren't watching Jimmy. So you know what? I'll watch some highlights for you, and I'll tell you about it tomorrow on Undivided so you can give me the views and not Jimmy Kimmel. All right, let's get some comments from the live stream. Matt, hello, friend, with a $10 super chat over there in West Seattle. Quote, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Saul Alinsky, Rules for Radicals, 1971. This is a leftist playbook. Obama and Hillary wrote college theses on this book. Oh, I didn't know that.
Wow.
Is that true? I just repeat comments. I don't check them for veracity. Joe Doe on Facebook, what are the initiatives called? Can I go online or does it have to be in person? So a couple things. So go to, is it letsgowa.org or .com? Can you check on that for me?
Letsgowa.com.
Letsgowa.com. You can find locations to sign them. I think you can even request they be sent to you. But if you signed the Let's Go Washington initiatives back in 2023, they have your information. And this week, I was told, I talked to Brian Haywood of Let's Go Washington yesterday on my drive home. And because I was talking about, hey, what's going on with your signature gatherers? And he said that if you signed those this week, they'll be mailing them to your door. So their hope is that, that's an easy way to collect signatures. These people signed our initiatives before, so they kind of tend to agree with what we're trying to do. So let's just send them right to their house, prepaid envelope to send them back. So I wouldn't worry if you have signed those because you'll probably get it in the mail, but still go to letsgowa.com and find a way to sign them. Jack Spratt, federal money has to be taken away from blue states and blue cities that do this kind of undemocratic Marxist BS. Yeah, I just... Ultimately, I just want there to be some balance. Ultimately, I want them to have consequences for their actions and for voters to see the hypocrisy in what they're doing. Country Guy, wonder what their reaction would be to signing initiatives which are nothing other than the Bill of Rights. I don't know if I know what that means. Wonder what their reaction would be to signing initiatives which are nothing other than the Bill of Rights. The Seattle Times is trash. Baron of Gray Matter, we know the Seattle Times. We know they are part of the Puget Pravda. We are not surprised. Why read this BS? Kimmel said he isn't apologizing. Kimmel said he's not apologizing?
I haven't heard that.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Like I said, I'm not surprised because I don't see him. I mean, he hates Trump. I mean, it is. Right.
But it's not about Trump. It's about Charlie Kirk and not assassinating someone in cold blood. He doesn't have to like, you don't have to like Trump to call that out.
Yeah, he sees it all as the same.
Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
On Como not airing Kimmel, Rachel Cisneros says, Jimmy might have a large number of viewers tonight, but after that, I bet he takes a nosedive. Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I don't think he'll become this cultish figure on the left because, you know, he pushed back against Donald Trump. On Bob Ferguson celebrating Plymouth Housing, Bolt Up says, Bob keeps exposing how clueless and out of touch he is with reality. I don't think he's clueless and out of touch. I think he knows exactly what's true. But he's doing what helps him politically.
In fact, he probably watched our segment last week and he's like,
He's probably like, yes, like I actually want to make her angry. And whatever she says, I'm just going to pretend the opposite. Shock says, I'm a landlord with a different housing provider similar to Plymouth. And I can tell you from the inside that Housing First does not work. It only subjects good, normal residents to the bad. 100%. It's really sad to know that in some of these housing units, including Plymouth, there are people who genuinely are trying to get their life back together. They don't want to be around the drugs anymore. They don't want to be around the criminal element. So they're in these housing units and it just follows them there because there's no standards, there's no rules. And then you got people like Bob Ferguson, there's no escaping. And then you got people like Bob Ferguson who was like, this is great, and is not standing up for them. It is. That's a really good point, Shock. It's so disgusting. La Pickett on Facebook. While taxpayers will lose their homes because of high taxes. Yeah. So you've got taxpayers footing the bill for this housing that's not working while they can't even afford to be in their homes. It's not right. Seattle students planning to walk out in support of October 7th. Doc Holliday. Oh, yes. The rape and pillage is just like tea in the harbor.
Yeah, same thing.
You would assume it's like they're all... Oh, no, people who founded this country off of acts of civil disobedience.
Right.
It's like, yeah, they threw tea in a harbor. They didn't maim, mutilate, kill, and rape people. It's crazy.
Yeah.
On Kamala Harris wanting Buttigieg, but, you know, he was gay. So, let's see, Jeremy.
I didn't say that. But, I mean, I said that.
Yes, I did.
I love how she thinks. Like 108 days would have won it for her.
Yeah.
Or even 207 days.
The more you talked,
the worse it got.
It's just, yeah. Jeremy Hubble says, how do you print word soup on paper? Because, like, she can't talk good. So can she write better than she talks? I doubt she wrote it. I bet somebody else wrote it and she just sort of dictated things to them.
Disaster.
Matthew says, not only are you not going to read her book, but it appears Kamala didn't read her book either.
Right.
Because she doesn't really know what it says.
But, you know.
I didn't. And then, of course, Rachel Maddow isn't going to be like, what, you know, yes, you did say that. And you're even acknowledging right now that you said that. So, yeah. Just crazy.
She kind of wanted to. Her body language was kind of saying.
Well, because she's gay.
You are saying that. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Right.
Yep. No, can't do that. Goes against the line.
But they give her a pass because she's not that smart.
Well, they give her a pass because politics, but also because I don't think reiterating the question is going to result in a better answer. Mm-hmm. God. Oh, there's some interesting comments in the live chat today. Okay. we're going pretty long, so we'll get to our closing sanity check. But first, the most common email I get from viewers and listeners of Undivided after I've told them to take the First Mark Challenge is, Brandy, thank you for telling me about the First Mark Challenge. Why did I wait so long to do it? Good question. There's a reason why I'm a member of the First Mark family, why our insurance our business insurance is through First Mark. It's just because it rocks. It is really one of the best things I've done for my family, for my business. It has taken so much stress off my plate. We all know how annoying it is to try to understand insurance, make sure you have the right insurance, the right price, and we just end up throwing our hands in the air and being like, I'm sure it's good enough. Well, First Mark Insurance is going to do all that work for you. So they're going to take it off your plate. You never pay them anything for their services. They're going to make sure you have the best insurance that actually covers your needs at the best price, and then they're going to proactively make sure it's up to date every single year and keeping up with the changes in your busy lives. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, and keep sending in your First Mark challenge success stories. We love hearing them. We like reading them on the air. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Who initially said this, but I think we kind of repeated it. And Donald Trump might have said something similar to this, you know, and he's like, there's nothing I could do that Democrats would celebrate. And we kind of joked that, like, Donald Trump could cure cancer. He could cure cancer and Democrats would protest outside the White House saying, hands off our cancer. I have a right to die from cancer. So whatever Donald Trump does, they're going to push back. The opposite is good. So maybe that, although it was meant to be hyperbolic, isn't actually too far from the truth. So Donald Trump, RFK Jr., came out and they had this press conference about the link, and this is supported by Harvard, okay? The link between taking Tylenol when you're pregnant and autism. So what happens? Well, of course, Democrats are like, that's not true, that's not true. Very similar to the analogy we gave of, oh, they'd celebrate cancer. Here's a video of a pregnant woman posted online. Here is me, a pregnant woman, taking Tylenol because I believe in science and not someone who has no medical background. So it's this pregnant woman celebrating as she's pregnant, taking Tylenol, like just to stick it to Donald Trump. I'm going to risk autism for my child just to stick it to Donald Trump. It's really gone too far. The AAPD, which is an organization that helps people who are dealing with autism, posted this on social media. Autism doesn't need to be cured. And it's been shared hundreds of thousands of times all over social media.
It's really shocking.
It's absolutely insane and shocking. And look, I don't think you have to vilify people. I don't think you have to vilify people who are autistic and kids who are autistic.
No.
You want to celebrate them and support them and all of those things.
You want to help them. And you want to help prevent it.
Right. But to say you wouldn't want to prevent it,
it's just nuts.
It's crazy.
And just to say, hey, there might be a link. You might want to avoid this. And we're not saying, hey, if you get the temperature of 102, like, don't take Tylenol or don't figure out a way to bring down your temperature when you're pregnant. That's not what anybody is saying. They're just saying, hey, there might be a link here. You might want to figure out an alternative, or you might want to talk to your doctor.
It's like they want.
It's just nuts to me.
Yeah, it's the American Association of People with Disabilities. It's like they want people to be born with disabilities. Isn't the goal to say, hey, it's kind of like, honestly, the homeless industrial complex is like, oh, we can't fix disabilities because then we wouldn't have the American Association of People with Disabilities. So no, we're not vilifying kids who are autistic and adults who are autistic who already exist on this planet. Yeah, can't undo it. But, you know, if you can prevent another kid from being born with autism, why wouldn't you? Well, because Donald Trump wants to do it. So it's just crazy.
Unreal.
Insane. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We truly do. Although we appreciate a little bit more our paid subscribers. So if you want to be appreciated a little bit more, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it pretty easy. So, all right, we'll see you guys back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.